The name of the sermon today is Perplexity. Perplexity. P-E-R-P-L-E-X-I-T-Y. Perplexity. And as you're going to find, that is a word straight out of your Bible. Some time ago now, I wrote three pieces, actually three sermons, about the end time as it relates to one's salvation. One is shock, or how to prepare for the shock of the end time. Another is final checklist, which would be a final spiritual checklist for the end time. And of course, I did the sermon Moment of Judgment, or Are We in the Time of the Ten Virgins? Today, we're going to immerse ourselves into a specific set of scriptures that speak to how many might react to sudden end time events. As we do this, my admonition, encouragement to all of us is to be calm and ready to take action. Be calm and ready. Be ready to take action. By this, I mean be calm and ready to take action physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. We will begin with a Bible reading to establish the context of the specific scriptures that we're going to study today. If you'll turn over to Luke 21. Luke 21. And we're going to begin in verse 7. Luke 21 and verse 7. And they ask him, saying, Master, but when shall these things be, and what sign will there be when these things shall come to pass? And he said, Take heed that you be not deceived, for many shall come in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and the time draweth near. Go ye not therefore after them. But when you shall hear of wars and commotions, be not terrified. For these things must first come to pass, but the end is not by and by. Then said he unto them, Nation shall rise up against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. And great earthquakes shall be in divers places, and famines, and pestilences, and fearful sights, and great signs shall there be in heaven. But before all these, they shall lay their hands upon you, and persecute you, and deliver you up into the synagogues, and into the prisons, being brought before kings and rulers for my name's sake. And it shall turn to you for a testimony. Settle it therefore in your hearts, not to meditate before ye shall answer, for I will give you a mouth and wisdom which all of your adversaries shall not be able to gainsay or resist. And ye shall be betrayed both by parents and brethren and kinsfolks and friends, and some of you shall they cause to be put to death. And you shall be hated for all of all men for my sake. Verse 18, but there shall not a hair of your head perish. In your patience possess ye your souls. And when you have seen Jerusalem compassed with armies, then know that the desolation thereof is nigh. Then let them that are in Judea flee into the mountains, and let them that are in the midst of it depart out, and let not them that are in the countries enter in thereto. For these shall be days of vengeance, and all things which are written may be fulfilled. But woe unto them that are with child, to them that give suck in those days, for there shall be great distress in the land, and wrath upon the people. And they shall fall by the edge of the sword, and shall be led away captive of all nations, and Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled. We then come to verses 25 through 28, where we will spend the rest of our time in this sermon. Luke 21, beginning in verse 25. You'll see where I got the title of the sermon from. Verse 25, and there shall be signs in the sun, and in the moon, and in the stars, and upon the earth distress of nations, with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring. Now, when I came across this verse the other day, I was intrigued with the word perplexity. I mean, what does that mean? Why is it here? The verse has already said that there is great distress of the nations. So the nations are in distress at all these end time events, and clearly these end time events are suddenly happening in mass, as we're going to see. And then it says, with perplexity. We want to find out what that means and what it has to do with you and I. Verse 26, men's hearts failing them for fear and for looking after those things which are coming upon the earth, for the powers of heaven shall be shaken. And then shall they see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. And when these things begin to come to pass, then look up, lift up your heads, for your redemption draweth nigh. Let us go through verse 25. For our purposes, we divide the verse into four parts. Number one, and there shall be signs in the sun and in the moon and in the stars. Number two, and upon the earth distress of the nations. Three, with perplexity. Four, the sea and the waves roaring. Number one, there shall be signs in the sun and the moon and in the stars. From the John Gill, says, they shall be darkened and suffer very strange and surprising ellipses. And from the John, also from the John Gill, for and in the stars, they shall fall from heaven, as in Matthew 24:29. And so the epithoic version reads here, all which, as it may be understood in the literal sense, so it may likewise in figurative and mystical one and be interpreted of the changes there should be in the Jewish state. You can go on YouTube and there's individuals that will talk about these various states of what will happen in the sky. I get that it's more literal than it is figurative, and all these strange things that can happen. And interestingly, there's strange things happening on the earth right now, as I will show you later. Quoted verse was Matthew 24:29. Immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of the heaven shall be shaken. Let's go to the second part of the verse. And upon the earth, distress of nations. From the John Gill, upon the land of Israel, in the several nations and countries beyond to it, as Galilee of the nations, Judea, and the region beyond Jordan, shall be in great distress. Well, that shouldn't be a surprise to any of us who know a little bit about prophecy, that the focus of world events is going to be in the Middle East. So we're going to see that. But I would clearly expect and would not be surprised that this distress would be upon all the nations around the world. From the Barnes notes for the same part of the verse, some have proposed to render the word earth by land, confining it to Judea. It often has this meaning, and there seems some propriety in so using it here. The word translated distress denotes anxiety of the mind. So here we have a meaning, distress upon the nations, anxiety of the mind. So we have to wonder why we're adding the word perplexity. It says, such an anxiety as people have when they do not know what to do to free themselves from the calamities. And it means here that the calamities would be so great and overwhelming that they would not know what to do to escape. There would be a want of counsel and deep anxiety at the impending evils. So there's going to come a time, and we've had disasters, and you and I have witnessed a lot of disasters on the television, terrible earthquakes here and volcanoes over there and civil unrest and terrorism and all of these things that are going on, but not in a way, and you know, we might have even, some of you might have even been witness physically, you know, been in the place where some of these things are happening. But not in a way where it would be multiple calamities so great and overwhelming that we wouldn't know what to do. The Robertson word picture has for the word distress anguish. Anguish. So imagine the nations in anguish. It is common to man to fix things. If something happens, We can fix it or we can escape from it. We're going to enter into a time in which there's probably not going to be an escape. The things that will go into the mind of man, and right now I'm talking about the people in the world, these thoughts will come to their mind, how can I fix this? How can I escape this? And those possibilities are not going to be there. And that would bring anguish. If you don't know what to do, and it doesn't look like there's a way out, it's anguish. We experience this when somebody dies. Most of the things that happen in the world, even if somebody gets cancer, breaks a leg, or has to have an eye operation, we can grasp that. We can live with that, even if it's us with a broken leg or, you know, the diagnosis of cancer or having to have some sort of an operation. We can deal with that. It's one thing that we're undertaking. But when it's overwhelming and there doesn't seem anything that I can do, and there doesn't seem a way where I can emotionally and mentally handle it, then that's going to bring anguish. Let's look at the word perplexity, because this word was added, you know, by God to this sentence. And so he wanted to make it clear that beyond and upon the earth distress of nations, he adds with perplexity. Let's see what this means. John Gill says, of the mind, perplexity of the mind, not knowing what to do, which way to go, or step to take. This Sirach version, instead of it, reads clapping or pressing of the hands, what we would call the wringing of the hands. And that's another description of anguish, which is done by persons when in agony and great distress. Barnes Notes has, rather on account of their perplexity or the desperate state of their affairs. The Sirach has it perplexity or wringing of hands, which is a sign of deep distress and horror. And Robertson's Words Pictures says, the state of one who is apros, A-P-O-R-O-S, who has lost his way. Here only in the New Testament, though, an old and common word. And I always find it interesting when a word is chosen for the Bible. And that's the only word that's the only time you're going to see it in the entire Bible, or you'll see it in one or two places. In our case, the word perplexity is used twice in the Old Testament, and we're going to look at those. Isaiah 22. So turn back in the Old Testament to Isaiah 22. This is a prophecy about the city of Jerusalem. Isaiah 22, we're going to begin in verse 1. Isaiah 22 and verse 1, the burden of the valley of vision. What aileth thee now that thou art wholly gone up to the housetops? Thou art full of stirs, a tumultuous city, a joyous city. Thy slain men are not slain with the sword, nor dead in battle. All thy rulers are fled together. They are bound by the archers. All that are found in thee are bound together, which have fled from far. Therefore, said I, look away from me. I will weep bitterly, labor not to comfort me, because of the spoiling of the daughter and my people. For it is a day of trouble and of treading down and of perplexity by the Lord God of hosts in the valley of vision, breaking down the walls and of crying to the mountains. Notice the commentary on verse 5 and the word perplexity. In which we know not what to do, we are embarrassed, and we know not where to look for relief. Now clearly this is going to be happening to all of these people. All these are what we would call people in the world. This is going to be happening. So everything that's happening around Jerusalem, these people are going to be in anguish and despair. They're not going to know what to do. And world events, all of these cascading events, these sudden happening events, we're gonna witness one thing like a strong earthquake that more devastating than we've ever seen, and then before we can even take that in, something else is gonna happen. So there's gonna be this avalanche of events that are gonna happen. Imagine, I want you to meditate today on what your mind would be reacting to. This perplexity is not a word that is speaking only to the minds of those in the world, but to you and I, first fruits. It could be very devastating if we're not ready. We have to meditate. We have to be ready. We have to understand how to be calm in these kinds of situations. The other verse where we see the word perplexity in the Old Testament is Micah 7 and verse 4. So turn a few pages over to Micah chapter 7 and verse 4. The best of them is as a briar, the most upright is sharper than a thorn hedge. The day of the watchman and thy visitation cometh. Now shall be their perplexity. And here's what the Pulpit Bible Commentary has to say about, and now shall there be perplexity. When this day of the Lord comes, there shall be confusion. And it refers to Isaiah 22 verse 5, which we just read. It shall bring chastisement before deliverance. Which is interesting, because that's more of a statement that would be for us first, deliverance that we hope for after all of these events. So chastisement before deliverance, and of course that would also apply to all of those in the world. There will be a deliverance when Christ comes back. The prophet here, as elsewhere, changes from the second to the third person, speaking of the people generally. The Septuagint now has it as, now shall there be weeping. So the Syriac, they are as bad as a thorn hedge. They shall fall into perplexity. So it's going to be a very perplexing time. And if you saw the graphic I used for this sermon in the schedule of our Bible studies and sermons, you'll see that graphic showing uncertainty and doubt and all of these things that could come into the mind. This is part of the perplexity. How is your mind going to react to these things? You have to ask yourself, what emotions do you think you would go through? We've seen some events in this life, haven't we? But we have to be mentally and emotionally and spiritually ready for this. We can talk about it, but what I want you to meditate on is it really happening. And you can get a taste of this by looking at calamities, and I'm going to give you some links in this particular sermon, as I did in another sermon, on all the calamities that could happen. And if you were to go through and study all of these in a sitting or over a period of time and just see what calamities have come, and then knowing in your mind that what's coming is greater than what you can see on YouTube. So you might want to study the calamities that have happened just in the last 10 years to this earth. Giant earthquakes and tsunamis and all these things that have happened. And then add to that there's going to be people dying from pestilence. And there's going to be people dying from starvation. There's going to be a lot of things happening. It's going to be more than the normal day-to-day mind of the human can take. And so even for a first fruit, with God's Holy Spirit in them and God guiding them and all of the things that you address in the salvation process, this is still something that has to be addressed. Because God doesn't want you in perplexity. God wants you to be calm and ready to take action. He wants you to be a light in those places where you're going to be able to be a light here in the end time. Let's look at the fourth part of the verse. And I find this one interesting because I just run into some you know, talking about going to YouTube and looking at possible disasters. When you go over to YouTube and look at disasters, you can get all kinds of videos of disasters that have actually happened. They'll show you from history. They'll do reenactments, or you know, they'll use a special. It's called AGI, I think. It's where they use renditions of what happened in those terrible calamities. Others will be actual video of the calamities. Then there's a whole another set of videos on what could happen. The calamities that could happen, something like a 9.0 earthquake and this type of thing. And there's even a movie called San Andreas where you can get a feel for what that would be like. So here is the sea and the waves roaring. And I believe this to be literal, not figuratively. I don't think any part of this verse is just figurative. From the John Gill, we have, "For the sea and the waves roaring, which design some unusual and extraordinary storms and tempest, and undulations of the Sea of Galilee, or Tiberias, which would be so very terrible as to cause uneasiness, distress, and perplexity." And so some versions render it "because of the sea." From Barnes Notes, we have, "This is not to be understood," now they say, "it's not to be understood literally, but as an image of great distress." I don't believe that. I think that the particular commentator, Barnes Notes, was in perplexity here. He said he was hoping that maybe it wasn't to be understood literally. So it's probably designed to denote that these calamities would come upon them like a deluge. And when in a storm the ocean roars, the wave rolls on wave and dashes against the shore, and each succeeding wave is more violent than the one preceding it, so would be the calamities come upon Judea. I don't know how he can say, how this particular commentary can say, well, this is not to be understood literally, and then he goes on to describe it literally. It's kind of crazy to me. But on another way of looking at it, when you're at the ocean and the waves are coming in one after another, that would give you a mental picture of how fast these things are going to happen. When we see a great calamity today, it's usually far away and it's isolated. It's an isolated incident, meaning there isn't a whole lot of other calamities happening in the same place at the same time. So it isn't like an avalanche. Or these waves coming into the shore. So they would roll over the land, and each wave of trouble would be more violent than the one that preceded it, until the whole country would be desolate. The same image is used in Isaiah 8, 7 through 8, and Revelation 18, 15. Let's take a look at those verses. Isaiah 8, beginning in verse 7. "Now therefore, behold, the Lord bringeth up on them the waters of the river, strong and many, even the king of Assyria and all his glory. And he shall come up over all the channels and go over all his banks. And he shall pass through Judah, he shall overflow and go over, he shall reach even to the neck, and the stretching out of his wings shall fill the breadth of the land, O Emmanuel." In Revelation 18:15, "The merchants of these things, which were made rich by her, shall stand afar off for the fear of her torment, weeping and wailing. And for the roaring of the sea," our word echo is this word E-C-H-O-S, a reverberating sound. Now there's a number of videos on YouTube, and I just happened to see these before I put this sermon together, so it came readily to mind. But there's a number of videos on YouTube which speak to weird things happening in the oceans right now. So there's a lot of weird things happening on the earth, and it's not getting news coverage. But there are people out there that are witness to these things. They film it and they put it up on YouTube. So there's weird things happening in the oceans, and speculation, there's other that show speculation how this prophecy, these particular prophecies I've just read to you, might be fulfilled physically. We could talk about rogue waves and tsunamis. You saw that tsunami that took out, you know, Indonesia and a lot of places over there by India, and the tsunamis that wiped it, killed all kinds of people and caused billions of dollars in damage, that will seem light. That will seem like kid's play compared to what's coming. So we will see rogue waves, and science doesn't even understand, really. They know that the rogue waves exist, and if they're not sure, but they think that rogue waves have been around for a long, long time. And rogue waves is something you cannot count on not being there. You should more count on rogue waves being there. Rogue wave is where you're out on the ocean and there's regular wave action. You might be blessed and the ocean is flat, but if you're in any kind of wave action, a rogue wave is one that will come along every once in a while. It's rare, but it comes along, and it's giant. It's like a tsunami coming against your boat, and it's been known to trash boats, sink boats, and hurt a lot of people. And when I've seen enough about rogue waves, I don't have a great desire to go to sea. So do a study, and I give you a link there to go look and see what rogue waves are all about. And of course, tsunamis. You know about tsunamis, tidal waves. And there's more and more places now that are coming up with escape plans for tsunamis. I've been out to some of the ocean beaches, and as you, after a day of fun at the beach, and then you're leaving, you'll see all these signs that this is the exit. If the word goes out that there's a tsunami coming, take this road and get away. It says, and there are also videos speaking to mass beaching of fishes and sea mammals like dolphins and whales. Others speak to the dying of the oceans, especially the Pacific Ocean, with references to Fukushima, a nuclear disaster. And if you've been following any of the news, now we've posted some of these stories about the Fukushima nuclear disaster that was the result of a tsunami that hit Japan and completely trashed this nuclear plant, and a lot of leakage, maybe way more. And it continues to this day. They still haven't fixed it. And how long has it been? It's been many years since that nuclear disaster, and we, every once in a while, in some foreign press, not our press, you'll get word that there's still leakage going on. And you can find news stories about this nuclear waste, this nuclear material has gone out into the Pacific Ocean and finally reached our shores. And stuff from that disaster, not just the Fukushima disaster, but the tidal wave that hit Japan, a lot of that stuff went out to sea. And then after several months, it started showing up on our shores. So that should give you some idea that also the nuclear waste. And now around the world, especially in the Pacific Ocean, you're seeing all of these people wake up in the morning, they go out to the beach, and completely covered. You can see this on YouTube. Completely covered with fish. Other places, it's you know, scores and scores and scores of either dolphins or porpoises or whales, and they'll sit there and tell you, we don't know why it's happening. We don't know why it's happening. And other news stories, if you can find them, will tell you that they think it's because of the nuclear waste. The oceans are dying, and we know that there is prophecies that speak to the oceans dying. Everything in the ocean will die. So this could be the setup for it. And then you can find these videos speaking to where this is going. Total annihilation of all life in the oceans. And other such things that are happening on the planet. Now the title of this sermon is Perplexity, and comes from our key verse of study, Luke 21:25, which reads, to refresh your memory, and there shall be signs in the sun and in the moon and in the stars, and upon the earth distress of nations with perplexity. People going crazy in their minds. Total fear. Nowhere to go. There's no way to fix this. No way of escape. That's perplexity. The sea and the waves roaring. We have seen that this word perplexity is speaking to the mindset of humans witnessing all of these events. By humans, I mean virtually all of the people in the world and a goodly number of first fruits. What first fruit would not be initially upset and perplexed by a huge and varied list of unfolding prophetic events? The commentaries define this word perplexity as the human mind not knowing what to do, which way to go, or step to take. It defines it as a wringing of the hands and having the emotions of deep distress and horror. To get a sense of what is going to cause all of this shock and perplexity in the mind, let me take an excerpt from the sermon preparing for the shock. Under practical considerations, there are all kinds of shocking events one could talk about and a whole plethora of how we should physically, mentally, and emotionally deal with it. All one has to do is go to the internet and type into a search engine, coping with disaster, and you will get all kinds of resources. There are a number of natural disasters, financial disasters, and man-made disasters and terrorist events. Here's a short list. And if you have the online version of this sermon, you'll see that you can go to links and see more about these. But hurricanes and tornadoes, and I'm thinking of Katrina and the $108 billion in damages in 2005. Earthquakes, and I'm thinking of the one in Haiti that killed 316,000 people in 2010. They're still not recovered from that. Massive floods and widespread wildfires, and I'm thinking of the infamous Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire in New York, where the 146 deaths took place, mostly women, one as young as 11. So these fires can be devastating, and these fires could be such a, you got to think bigger. Each one of these disasters, you have to think bigger. And the reason I give you the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire in New York is if you do a study of what happened in that particular fire, these people were perplexed because there was no way out. The only way out, and it was the same with 9/11, they jumped. To get away from the fire, they jumped out of buildings knowing that they were going to die. Now, I want you to take that bigger, because if there's going to be massive floods and widespread wildfires, they're going to be on a much grander scale than anything you're going to find on the internet, except for those videos that are going to take you through speculation on what could happen. Tsunamis. Everybody remembers the earthquake in Japan that killed over 17,000 and affected most of the Pacific Ocean Rim countries. Cost at last report, $235 billion. And the most costly disaster in history. Famines. There were four major famines in China. And I suspect that there's famines going on there, and as well as North Korea, that you don't find out about, you don't hear about. It takes a lot of digging to find out what's really happening in North Korea today. But there were four major famines in China between 1810 and 1849. 45 million people died. 45 million. And it's hard for somebody living in North America, where food is plentiful, to think that how could 45 million people die of hunger? You want to talk about perplexity of the mind. So we're not talking just about perplexity of us being in an event or rapidly unfolding events. We're talking about, I'm perplexed trying to figure this one out. I give you a link over there. You can go study the four major famines in China in a short period of time, 39 years, the four major famines. But I can't even wrap my mind around 45 million people dying from starvation. It just doesn't make sense. I'm perplexed. Pestilence. Most have heard of the Black Death, the bubonic plague, which was 1338 to 1351, which killed 100 million people. And that could happen again. There's people saying that there could come a plague that would make the Black Death plague of the 1300s look like nothing. And of course, the 9/11 disaster and what that did, not only physically killing a lot of people, bringing buildings down, but plunged us into a war on terror, which has cost billions of dollars and a lot more lives. From this short list, we are looking at almost 200 million dead, trillions in damages, and billions in lives affected. All of this is shocking and perplexing to me. I can't wrap my mind around it. Yet, I'm being told by the Word of God that it's going to be greater. What's coming is greater. It says, these disasters are nothing when compared to what is prophesied to come. How do we know this? It's in Matthew 24 and verse 21. Matthew 24 and verse 21. For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. So what is coming? I have another short list from you, and I'm still quoting from that sermon on Prepare for the Shock. Everything you're about to see on this list is pure speculation, but based on strong indications from the Bible in severity. So what I'm going to do with this list, I want to overwhelm you with the idea of things could happen that would leave minds perplexed, not knowing what to do, where to go, and, you know, facing the fact that there's probably nowhere to go. Number one, complete economic collapse in North America and throughout the entire world. So economic collapse. Now, that is prophesied not only by the Bible, but it's the first thing that Garner Ted says to look for. The first thing that's going to come, especially to North America, will be economic collapse. I read this as complete economic collapse in North America, which would then set off economic collapse around the world. Two, martial law. I find this one kind of interesting because, and I get articles from some of you about the possibility of martial law happening. And I give you a link over to martial law and what that would be like. It would be terrible. It'd be just a situation that would leave us perplexed. But martial law sounds like maybe this is a good thing. Maybe it's going to settle things down. But it's actually going to bring a lot of trouble for a lot of people, especially in North America, because we're not used to anything like this. I'm not quite sure, though there is speculation you can see out there on how they would do this. Martial law has been in the past, it's been done for a city or for a small area, but martial law for North America, say, that would have to be a devastating situation. Millions of people involved. Number three, massive food shortages. This is one thing that nobody in North America can fathom, because we've never been really in food shortages. There's been shortages of certain kinds of foods at times, but massive total food shortages, which is another word for famine, no food in the stores. Most stores only have a week's worth of food anyway. People don't, they just think, oh, I can go to the food store anytime, it's loaded with food. But if something happens and there comes up a food shortage, you can go on the internet and you'll see supermarkets with nothing on the shelves. And this even happens when they say there's a hurricane coming. And we've seen news reports, Louisiana or Florida or somewhere, and the news crews go into the food stores and you can see they've been bought out. That's because there was only a week's worth of food there. And when you get a massive run on a food store, it doesn't take much really to empty it. Next time you go to the food store, I want you to look around at volume. So you always go in there with a list. I'm going to get this, that, and the other thing. I want you to go in and see how little there really is in that store. And then imagine, 25,000 people making a rush on that store. And then you'll get to understand a little bit about food shortages. And what would you do when you're going to be meditating later today about how am I going to mentally prepare for this? Imagine all of a sudden you got the word, don't go to the food stores, Costco's empty, Sam's Club is empty, there's nothing over there. What are you going to do? Number four, political breakdown or anarchy. There's a lot of factions out there in North America that want anarchy now. That's perplexing to me. Number five, the U.S. becoming a poverty-stricken third world nation. Some say we're already almost there. And the nation that I was born into isn't the nation I'm living in now. This nation is far, far different from what I witnessed and grew up in the late 40s and the 50s. Completely crazy. Number seven, suspension of the Constitution. This is going to be perplexing to a lot of people. A change in the government or a dictator taking over the U.S. or Canada. Eight, a massive terrorist event such as a nuclear device going off in the United States. And then I give you a link over here to see the article on the impact of nuclear attacks on U.S. cities. There's even been movies about it, about a terrorist event in which an atomic bomb is set off. There's even a site, and I'd have to find it again, but there's a site where you can go and you can set off atomic bombs. You can pick your ground zero. I think I did this with Las Vegas, and I said, atomic bomb of this much power, set it off right there in the middle of the Vegas Strip, and what would be the damage, and it will tell you how many people would die, what the damage would be, so you can get a feeling for this kind of a thing. So you can do your own nuclear attacks on virtually any city in the world, and with any type of known atomic device, everything from the suitcase device, which is only going to kill people in a few blocks, all the way up to the biggest atomic bomb, which Russia currently has, which can take out a whole state. And you can set these things off and see what they would do. Number nine, an EMP. This is what a lot of people, including Garner Ted Armstrong, and I think Mark Armstrong also wrote a whole article on this, which is posted over at the EA site, the EMP attack. This would be easy for even a country like Iran or North Korea to do. And an EMP is the idea where they just send up one rocket, say over Kansas, with an atomic device in it, and it blows. It's not going to kill a whole lot of people, but it's going to take out all of the U.S. power, all of those places that haven't been hardened. The U.S. knows about EMP. There's a lot of people in Congress that have talked about we should be preparing ourselves for an EMP, and some places have been hardened, which means the atomic blast could go off in the air, but it wouldn't take out the power in this location. However, it's going to take out virtually everything here in Vegas. I don't know of any hardened targets in Vegas, save maybe the military base that's here. But when I drive around town, and you've done this too, you drive around and you see these places that have the electrical grids, those electrical stations. The EMP will take those out, just fry them. If you're driving your car when an EMP attack comes, your car is going to be no good. There's some speculation that if your car is in the garage when the EMP happens, you'll be able to drive your car because your engine was off at the time. Not verified at this moment. Number 10, assassinations and murders on a national scale. So we're not talking about one assassination, we're talking about multiple assassinations going on. And murders. Murder will go off the scale and it will be on a national scale. And what's interesting about a lot of these things, they're not going to get covered. Some disasters will be too big to hide, but there's going to be a lot. All of these, I want you to imagine all of these sneaking up on us. Economic collapse, murder going off the charts, food shortages, you know, this type of thing. Number 11, the beast and the false prophet actually taking power. I just got an article from one of you the other day. Could this be the ushering in, or could this event be that which ushers in the beast and the false prophet? And Mr. Armstrong, Mark Armstrong, has been alluding to the fact in his weekly updates that this and this and this is happening. Could this be opening the door to something stranger? He did that even in last night's report in the last paragraph there. Could this, words to the effect, could this be opening the door to something worse happening? And he's talking about the breakdown of the EU. The EU is breaking down. It's in financial trouble. It's in political trouble. They're in chaos with one another. There's a lot of hatred going on because Britain is in the process of exiting, and then the people in Britain, the authorities in Britain, from the Queen on down, want to kick out all the Europeans because of this, and the same thing is happening in Europe. They want to kick out all the Brits. See, when the EU came together, then jobs were plentiful in all of the EU, and so the people in all these countries spread out. So you got a lot of people from Britain working on the mainland of Europe. Well, now that they've exited, they're going to fire all of those people and kick them out. And the Prime Minister of England says, you do that, I'm going to kick out all the Europeans here. So you can see that chaos is going to go crazy over that. And some say, because, you can actually see articles that say, because of this, we could be ushering in World War III, which is number 12, World War III, an invasion of North America. And you can guess by who. If a great power comes to bear, and there's little things going on. If you do any internet searches on what's happening militarily, what's really happening in Germany? Are they building up an army over there? Are they building tanks? Are they adding more people just to the German army? Look up on the internet and find the 10 biggest armies in the world. Half of them are in Europe. So there's a lot of things that are happening that they're just building up in all of these places, much like what the calamities will be like. So how, you know, do calamities just happen, or is there a buildup? And what we're seeing, you know, under the heading of a possible World War III, is there's all kinds of things happening all around the earth. I remember one person telling me, oh, you don't have to worry about, come on, World War III? There's no way Europe could produce an army that fast. Well, the articles that I've been reading for the last 10 years make me think otherwise, that huge armies could be made very, very rapidly, and there's already an increase in military spending in Europe and elsewhere, and we have been weaker. Of course, the current president says he's going to fix that. We'll have to see and see how that works out with unfolding prophecy. It may be too little too late. Now, quickly, as I've given you this complete list here, 12, you know, shocking items. Imagine all of those happening at the same time. Now, quickly, imagine a number of these things happening at the same time or in rapid succession. Definitely shocking and perplexing. These would be mind-numbing situations, and our minds would be traumatized, disturbed, horrified, dismayed, and perplexed. Typical responses could be any or all of the following. These are elements of perplexity, shock and disbelief, a feeling of numbness or assault on the senses, panic, general panic, panic regarding distant family, runaway speculation, which if spread puts fear and panic in others, a wanting to turn off the TV or otherwise escape. I don't want to hear it. Sadness, despair, anger, extreme selfishness, and self-preservation. Substance abuse. And there's stories today of people that get into situations like this on a personal level, and they go to substance abuse to get away from it. And maybe that's a part of what's happening in the greater society with substance abuse, that people are trying to escape perplexity on lesser levels right now. Sickness or general breakdown of health. And that is all the end of the excerpt from my sermon on shock. And since you have the links to all of those, you can look at all of those. My admonition and encouragement to all of us is to be calm and ready to take action. I found something in the Biblical Illustrator, which is a commentary, that speaks directly to this admonition. I'm going to read it to you now under the heading of Patient Self-Possession in Times of Trial. Be collected, that you may be strong. Stand still and stand firmly. If you can do nothing else, do not slip back or step aside or attempt anything wrong or questionable. Patience is not merely a passive submission to evil, a dull, stupid, unfeeling indifference, like the insensibility of wood or stone, meaning dumber than a box of hammers. It is the result of thought. It implies effort. So patience includes effort. It is a sort of active bearing up of oneself under the pressure of the calamity, which at once indicates self-possession and secures it. It reacts upon that from which it proceeds and causes it to become stronger and stronger. I wish now to request your attention to some of the advantages which flow from obedience to the precept in the case of Christians when called to suffer great affliction or when exposed to the fear of impending calamity. In the first place, there is the conscience of not increasing the affliction by sin. If a Christian is impatient and gives way to fretfulness and temper or other forms of restiveness under trouble, he not only loses the advantage of calmness and self-possession, but his conscience receives a fresh injury, his proper religious feelings are hurt, his inward personal pace is disturbed, and thus the trouble presses upon him with double weight. It is a great blessing not to be exposed to this. In the next place, self-possession in a time of trouble will enable an individual to take a just view of the actual circumstances and of the nature and ends of the divine infliction. We are under the rule and guidance of one, meaning God, who has always an object in what he does, an object worthy of himself and connected with the peace and holiness of his church. In the third place, the man who has full possession of himself in a time of affliction will be able to engage in certain exercises of the mind which trouble calls to, but which are impossible or next to it when the soul is disturbed by agitation and excitement. In the day of, it says, quote, in the day of adversities, consider, quote, call upon me in the day of trouble, glorify me in the fire, enter into thy chamber, be still and know that I am God. My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, neither faint when thou art rebuked of him. But none of these things can be done or done well if a man is not quiet, patient, and self-possessed, if he is the victim of hurry, alarm, consternation, and surprise. Note the word consternation means a sudden alarming amazement or dread that results in the utter confusion or perplexity and dismay. Number four here, observe fourthly that it is only by such self-possession as the text, Luke 21, inculcates that an individual will be able to select and apply the proper means of escape from calamity, or which may help him to meet it or to counter its effects. The word inculcate means to implant by repeated statement or admonition, teach persistently and earnestly. Another way of encouragement is to immerse ourselves in the Word of God. We have to know that these things are coming. Bible's been telling this since you were called to obedience. Number five, in the last place, obedience to the text explained as an exhortation will best prepare a man or woman for the end result of the trouble, whatever that result may be. If the cloud and the calamity pass away and the man be fully delivered from it, he will be able to look back with serenity and gratitude, free from self-reproach or shame, had they broken down or become a victim of the perplexity. If it terminate fatally for himself or others, he will be able to acquiesce with intelligent faith in the divine will. So if the calamity is one in which you and I are going to be sacrificed for the name of Christ, even that will bring us serenity. We will be able to face that because of the admonition to be calm and ready to take action. So it doesn't really matter what these calamities are. We have to be calm and ready to take action. And by action, I mean physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. So when all these things begin to happen, be calm and ready to take action in all of those areas, physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. And remember Luke 21 and verse 28. Luke 21 and verse 28, the last verse I gave you at the opening of this sermon. And when these things begin to come to pass, then look up. Notice it says begin to come to pass. So, what's the best way to remain calm and ready to take action? It's right there. It says, when these things begin to come to pass, then look up and lift up your heads, for your redemption draweth nigh.